Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. This is the Portland City Council. Before we begin the formal part of our procedure, our council, is that we ask a question of our community and the people in this room is, how are the children? The reason we ask is because we know that when children in a community are well, the community is well. And what we do each week is invite an expert in to talk to us about children and youth issues. And today we have Kaya Range. Kaya, come on up. She's a senior at Grant High School. She's a Multnomah County Youth Commissioner, student representative for the Superintendent's Wellness Advisory Committee. She enjoys singing, dancing, playing her flute, and saying hi to people she knows in the hallway at school. Next year, she plans to go to college out of state and study international relations. Kaya, I just certainly hope that after you complete your out-of-state education, you come back to Oregon and spend the rest of your life here.
I will definitely consider it.
Good. Whether you'd like to or not.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I have been working on a project for my senior thesis, which addresses how we should encourage youth to get more involved in the community. As part of my project, I interviewed Portland citizens. I wanted to answer two questions. How involved are youth, Portland's youth in the community now, and how can we increase their involvement in the future? I already knew that the majority of youth are not engaged in community service, but I also knew that some are amazingly involved. I wanted to see if other people noticed and appreciated the hard work that those involved youth are doing. Unfortunately, I found that most people, unless they are already involved with youth, did not know what youth in Portland are doing. Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts were the only groups of youth that people mentioned, and they weren't even local scout troops. This shows that not only do we need to build more youth involvement, but the wonderful things that youth are already doing around the city need to be better publicized and noticed by the adult community. Personally, I would like to see every local paper and every local news station commit to a regular feature highlighting current positive youth involvement. As for how we can increase youth involvement in general, all the people I interviewed said they would like to see a school requirement for youth involvement in high schools and ideally in middle schools as well. Currently, there are a number of programs with community service requirements in Portland. However, the requirement only applies to those within the program, excluding most of the school's population. We need a school-wide requirement in every school. Given that all the people I interviewed brought up the idea of a community school requirement without my prompting, I believe that this is not only a good idea, but one which the Portland community would enthusiastically and unanimously support. I suggest that we implement community-based learning curriculum in our schools. Community-based learning expands the classroom out into the community. Community members become additional teachers. Students use the skills they learn in the classroom while interacting with community members and providing a real service. With the passage of the Youth Bill of Rights, we made a commitment to youth. I believe that now is the time to put that commitment into action and consider actively supporting this kind of change in our schools. Youth want to be a part of this city, but many don't get the opportunity. Community-based learning would give them that opportunity and not only benefit them, but the community as well, and ultimately, would improve the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kaya. Could we give her a little hand for this? That was great. I've seen her at various meetings around town, and she is an engaged young woman and is going to be very much a part of this community when she returns to Oregon, which she's promised me she will.
And she had a great Halloween costume.
City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard? Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. Please read the first communications.
Agenda item 29, request of Anton Vetterlein to address council regarding proposed aerial tram operations and fare plan.
Good morning. Good morning, all. My name is Anton Vetterlein, and as Carla said, I'm here to talk about the proposed aerial tram fare structure. When I signed up for this a week ago, I was concerned that there wasn't really a public venue to that would take testimony regarding the issue of the tram. Since then, I was invited to the tram executive management committee meeting, which met this morning, and so I've had a chance to talk to them, and I appreciate that. And I think they're, just to give you a report from that, they've put off making a decision, and I think you'll be hearing from them soon. And I don't think I need to recite chapter and verse about the tram report and what it originally laid out in terms of assumptions for the tram fare. I think you're all familiar with that at this point. I will say that the original plan was in line with what the Markham Hill plan, I think, had outlined more aspirationally and what I think city transportation policy calls for. I know that may be of less concern at this point than just figuring out how to pay for the darn thing. The executive management committee discussions, as I said, they were interested in what I had to say. They started focusing on the idea of how they could encourage committed transit users with some kind of pass system. I think that's good, but I felt like there was this focus on sort of irregular users as being tourists and the need to make money from them, and I understand that. But I think it kind of ignores periodic users who live in the area around the tram. There's been sort of a conception that the tram is sort of a dead end. It's not a destination. And there's no destination beyond OHSU, and I beg to differ. There's a community up there, and and it has a lot of development potential as well. There's three condo or townhouse proposals that are before the city right now, 50-plus units. There's plenty more potential in the area, and I'm interested. I think we're interested in having the same kind of use of the tram that people in the Pearl District would have with the streetcar. You know, it's, and I think people on the Hill at this point may not know how the tram can be a part of their daily life or their commute options. I like the idea of having options in terms of whether I can take the bus, sometimes I have to drive, or if I could bike. And I've heard from a number of people who've said that the tram would definitely encourage them to bike commute more often because either to the Hill, people at the VA, or residents up there who go downtown because it would make it easier to get up and get back up the hill. So I think it would help with just the general transit usage for the immediate neighbors, and I ask you to take that into consideration as well. And just to quickly follow up, I think it would be good to open up the tram to public usage sooner rather than later, just to gauge what that public usage is rather than setting a fare, which I think discourages public use, and not really finding out what the potential for that is outside of OHSU. And I also think it would help to perhaps alleviate some of the negative karma that the project has taken on over the year. So I know that you guys aren't making a decision. Sam, you're very much involved in that, and I've been told the executive management committee has the final say. OHSU did say they were kind of deferring to the city in terms of what the city's policy would be regarding non-OHSU fares. So I hope you could.
I just want to thank you for continuing to be a good advocate on all the issues that I've been involved with you on for years now. I did ask the executive management committee to not make a decision today, and have been having conversation with the various stakeholders about what are the possibilities. And I think the original vision, as you and I had a chance to talk one-on-one, the original vision is spot on. And I hope that with additional sort of creative thinking around it, we can get as close to it as possible. The part I want to avoid, as you and I discussed, is to repeat the mistakes of the tram up to this point, which is engaged in a lot of wishful thinking that has, you know, a year from now, are we back into some sort of financial crisis? But you're right, that was the operating assumptions back in 2004, and in the next 5 days, I have meetings scheduled with all the stakeholders to try to see if, through a different creative approach, if there's some way to achieve that vision.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Please read the next communication.
Item 30, request of Don Bach to address council regarding proposed aerial tram operations and fare plan.
Morning, councilors, and a very frosty morning. Be a good time if you take the tram up the hill and then take a nice walk in the woods.
It would.
I'm Don Bach. I'm here to speak for the Hillsdale Neighborhood Association, representing them. First of all, I want to address safety in the tram. Our neighborhood would like an annual report of full disclosure of all the cargo OHSU has and will be transporting on the tram. And we're concerned about radioactive materials. You know, there's a lot used in the medical professions. We'd like to know how they do it, when they do it, and when the people are there, when they're not there at the same time. Also medical waste and so on. That's important to the community, and I think it's important to you so we're not caught up by surprise sometime downstream when something happens. The proposed independent fee structure is a bad idea and a dumb idea, and I'm not going to go through all the stuff. Anton's covered this very well, and I really want to talk about maybe some opportunities to think about this a little differently. My son and I were talking about this during the holidays, and he said, well, you know, if you wanted to get this tram in the tour books of the world, you need to have something that goes with it. So we came up with the idea of Southwest Trails Trail 4T. The 4T stands for trolley. You start downtown, you take the trolley, you take the tram, you take the trails, which would go from OHSU to Council Crest to the zoo, and then you take the train back down. I'll bet you that'll be in every tour book of the world if you do this.
How long is the trail?
The trail, you know, I didn't measure it yet, Sam, but if you know, probably it's probably a 4-mile loop, something like
Great
that,
idea.
Five maybe. But it's not a walk. You know, you're doing the trolley, you're doing the tram, you're doing the train. This part from here to the trail part, that's probably only a mile to two.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Mile and a half. Hmm. And all we need is a little bit of funding from you guys and some support, and we'll get it done. But having this fair interchange is really important, because then we're showing off the best part of Portland by saying, look at our transportation system, look at all the aspects of it. And we could even put a point up on the hill someplace where they can ride the bus downtown if they choose. But, you know, to me, this could be the really showcase if we do it right. Yeah. The other alternative is to be a little bit like a chiseler sitting downtown with a sideshow in South Portland where you're out there, you don't even pay family wage, and you're taking, you know, we want $4 for everyone. I don't think we want to do that. I think we can do it better. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. That's a great idea.
Can you get me a sense of how much that would be?
The cost of this?
Yeah, by Friday.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now. $10,000.
Is there a special, though, because it's Wednesday?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Is there a special today because it's Wednesday?
The Wednesday special.
Yeah, tomorrow's just going to be 20th.
We're going to use it. Blue plate
hang around PDOT too long.
And Friday will be 50.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Please read the next.
Item 31, request of Rob Reynolds and Mary and Pete Mark to address council regarding a recently released book.
Please come forward, folks. Welcome, Pete and Mary.
Pleasure.
Rob.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Let me cut this up here. Good morning. For the record, my name is Pete Mark, and my address is 111 Southwest Columbia, Portland, Oregon, 97201. My wife, Mary, and I join you today for two reasons. The first is to say thank you for your dedication to public service and your commitment to the city we are all privileged to call our home. And the second is to share with you the final result of a very special project that Mary and I spearheaded with the support of some very, very generous civic leaders. The project is this beautiful book, Portland, The View from Here. It was a project that began when Rob Reynolds, one of the most talented and respected photographers in the Northwest, discussed with me the idea of producing a book of photographs that would reflect Portland's unforgettable beauty. Mary and I have called Portland our home for over a half a century. This city has been very good to us and our family, and we saw making this book a reality as one way in which we could give back to the city. Rob outdid himself with some truly breathtaking and unique photographs, all of them taken within city limits. And I think he succeeded in producing a breathtaking book that truly captures all aspects of Portland. It's my privilege to present you, Mr. Mayor, and city commissioners with a signed copy of the book and to personally invite you to a reception we're hosting on the evening of January 18th to officially introduce the book to all of Portland. It's now my privilege to introduce Rob Reynolds.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Robert Reynolds, and my address is 5331 Southwest McAdam Avenue, and I'm a lifelong Portlander. Thank you, Pete and Mary Mark, for this very generous and kind introduction, and most importantly, for believing in this book and in me. I wish to acknowledge the 14 sponsors for their trust and support. When I first approached Pete about this project, it revolved around the city's remarkable growth, where the downtown appears busier on the weekend than on the weekday, where people spend a great deal more time participating than in watching. It was a first-person view, a visual record to express and illustrate the great plan, what great planning can produce. We spent a year and a half photographing and designing this project, and I would like to publicly thank my business partner, Letha Wolf, for her design collaboration and commitment. Because of the sponsor support, we were able to print this book locally at Printing Today, and I know that each pressman and pre-press operator worked with a great deal of interest and a great deal of pride on this project. Their level of craftsmanship is this print, and this print quality is evidence. A few days ago, I spoke with the assistant of one of our sponsors, and she sent a copy of the book to her mother, who had not visited this big city for 8 years. Her mother called and said she had changed her mind that she had come to the city. Compliments don't get better than that. Through the efforts of our sponsors, 1,800 books are in circulation and is just now being placed in bookstores. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to share our view from here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Pete and Mary, for all you do for our community.
Yes, thank you.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Isn't that nice?
Amazing.
Is that the communications? Okay, we're going to move to the consent agenda. And I'm asked to pull item 35 off the consent agenda to be heard at the end of the regular agenda. Any commissioners wish to pull any other items from the consent agenda? Does anybody in this audience wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 32, establish a committee to address racial profiling in the city.
This resolution will formally establish the Racial Profiling Committee that is one of six recommendations presented to Council on October 17th by a partnership of community and police representatives. The report followed several listening sessions that allowed community members and police to dialogue on the topic of racial profiling. I am pleased to recommend the roster of member organizations that have agreed to participate. I'd like to thank you ahead of time and ask that you take your work seriously. I've asked Chief Sizer and Joanne Bowman to co-chair this committee for the first term and have approved funding a contract position to staff to work on the commission. Among other things, the committee will work in partnership to develop strategies for both the public and the police to increase communication and understanding. They will present a report to Council on an annual basis. The committee will eventually become a standing committee of the Human Rights Commission to provide for sustainability, accountability, and institutionalization. Our goal is that there will come a time when we'll no longer have to worry about addressing racial profiling because it will no longer exist. Will the presenters please come forward? Good morning, folks. Thanks good for morning. Being here. Can you speak? Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners Sten, Leonard, Saltzman, and Adams. For the record, my name is Joanne Bowman, and I'm the Associate Director of Oregon Action. On October 19, 2006, we came before you to present a report on the community listening sessions. You directed us to work together and come back to the council with a plan for implementation. As you know, the sessions were a joint effort by Oregon Action, Portland Police Bureau, the Northwest Constitutional Center, Center for Intercultural Organizing, the Mayor's Office, and several other community-based organizations to start the process of addressing racial profiling and the impacts on both the police, who are sworn to protect and serve, as well as community members who have experienced injustice. Today, I want to appreciate where we are in this process. First, I want to publicly thank Chief Sizer, who, once again, I just have to reiterate, didn't know me from Adam, except what she heard from her husband, which probably wasn't good. who immediately took this project to heart and showed her commitment from day one. And I really want to thank her for that effort. I also want to take a moment to publicly thank Portland Police Union President Robert King for agreeing to serve on the Racial Profiling Committee. I don't want to in any way ruin Mr. King's reputation today by accusing him of being a nice guy. However, I do really appreciate the fact that he's agreed to meet regularly so that we continue to build the relationship necessary for the Racial Profiling Committee to be effective in moving forward the work that we have in front of us. Today, you will pass a resolution that will create the Racial Profiling Committee. With your vote, Portland becomes once again a national model on creating true community police partnerships. I look forward to working with the Racial Profiling Committee to eradicate racial profiling from the practices of our community. Thank you.
Rosie Sizer, Portland Police Chief, and I just have a few comments. I want to thank Joanne Bowman from Oregon Action and Alejandro Corral from the Northwest Constitutional Rights Center for their leadership and their courage on taking on this issue and doing so with an extremely collaborative process and a collaborative mindset. The committee that we'll name shortly, its agencies and individual members represent, I think, a spirit of good faith, productive dialogue, and action across barriers. Race is an extremely difficult topic in American society that is seldom discussed productively because of history, anger, and fear. I look forward to working with the committee on this important topic that involves fairness and public trust.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, Commissioner Leonard, Adams, Saltzman. And my name is Alejandro Corral. I'm the Executive Director of the Northwest Constitutional Rights Center. I really want to once again thank the Commission, the City Council for its support on this effort. So I especially would like to thank Mayor Potter for his vision and commitment to make this a reality. I think we have a unique opportunity, as Joanne mentioned. It's a national model of partnership and cooperation between the community and the police, and I'm certainly looking forward to the work. I want to thank also Chief Sizer for her leadership and commitment and desire to tackle this issue head on. It's a very complicated issue. It's a very difficult topic, and I think her leadership and vision have really provided an opening for us to tackle it and really stay within, you know, the idea that we can eliminate racial profiling from Portland. And finally, I'd like to especially thank Robert King. You all know that we wanted him to be part of this process, and he's finally agreed to sit at the table and be part of the dialogue. I'm really looking forward to that. I think that these efforts have a much greater chance of success with his presence and leadership at the table. So I'm looking forward to working with him. And the Northwest Constitutional Rights Center is truly committed to these efforts. We're already working to by educating the Portland community about their legal rights and how to work with the police. We certainly look forward to continuing the work. And would like to thank the council also for appointing the center, as you will do so in a few minutes, to the committee. We are looking forward to it, and we're looking forward to the challenge. It's going to be a lot of work, and a lot of very difficult issues will arise. But I'm sure that based on the work that we've already done, I think we have a very good prospect. So thank you very much.
Thank you all. Any questions of these folks? Does everybody have a copy of the list of the people on the committee?
Could you appoint? Yes, Mr. Mayor. Joanne Bowman, World Co-Chair, as you said, from Oregon Action, Robert King, President of the Portland Police Association, Maria Lisa Johnson, who's the Executive Director of the Latino Network, Salam Ahmad, President of the Islamic Society of Greater Portland, Ray Espana, from Native America Youth Association, with Colin McCormick acting as his alternate.
Rosie Sizer, co-chair, Portland Police Bureau. Alejandro Carral, executive director, Northwest Constitutional Rights Center. Reverend Leroy Haynes, Albina Ministerial Alliance. A representative from the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, the Asian Family Center. And Ignacio Paramo, VOS, Day Laborers Association.
Maria Rubio, Policy Director at the Office of Mayor Potter. Chair Hank Miggins, Chair of the IPR Citizens Review Commission. Sergeant David Henry. Daryl Muck, Brother to Brother. Carl Goodman, Assistant Director of Department of Community Justice.
A youth organization to be determined. Citizens Crime Commission will be represented. Willie Brown, Director of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods. Dan Handelman, Director of Portland Cop Watch. Lorenzo Poe, he's the co-chair of the African American Alliance. And Annette Jolin, Professor and Chair at Portland State University Criminology and Criminal Justice, Urban and Public Affairs Department. That completes the list.
Could I suggest, we have a young person in the audience from the Metropolitan Youth Commission, which has been very engaged in civic activities, Kaya Range. And you know, that's a wonderful group. It's a very diverse group, and I would highly recommend, since they are engaged in so many other city and county activities, to consider the Metropolitan Youth Commission as a member.
I think that would be a wise choice, Mayor. Thank you.
Any further questions? Excellent.
Oh, this will provide oversight to the...
Yes, to the process of... Please call the vote.
We have two people who
wish
to testify.
Yes.
We have Dan Handelman and Sam Sachs.
What are you going to do for the other ones? The prostitution drug prison.
There's already a committee for that.
There is.
Yes.
Okay.
And the SAFE program.
Okay.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mayor Potter and commissioners. My name is Dan Handelman. I am honored to be selected to be part of the Racial Profiling Oversight Committee. I am very glad to hear that the Portland Police Association has agreed to come on board. I think that's a very important step in making the city a better place to live. And I'm also glad that there's going to be integration and communication between this Oversight Committee and the Citizen Review Committee, which just started its own bias-based policing work group to look at the broader issue, not about only about race, but about economic profiling and other issues like that. So this is a very good step forward that the CRC has needed to be included in this subject, and they are. And I'm hoping that this model for dialogue that we've seen has brought very good positive feedback from the police who participated in it can be applied to other community topics of concern about police, such as police use of force and the issues that we're going to be talking about a little later this morning with the use of deadly force, where you know maybe there can be community dialogue between police and the community about the recommendations and the changes that we'd like to see made on that as well. So this could be used as a model for future dialogue. And thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Sam Sachs. I'm a student at Portland State University, majoring in Black Studies. I also used to be a corrections deputy for Multnomah County Sheriff's Office for 6 years. I quit in 2002. The reason I come here today is because I've been involved going to the meetings, racial profiling meetings. I've been involved in diversity training. Like I said, I'm majoring in black studies. I think it's a great thing that's taking place right now with coming together as a community, as a police department, to address an issue that is real. I can serve as a witness, having worked in corrections, law enforcement, that racism exists, and it's real, and it needs to be stopped. It needs to be addressed. I want to commend the police department for getting involved and the police officers that came to the meetings. They were there. They were open. They listened. They were involved. The same with the community. My main point for coming to you today is that this is great that we're here today. We're putting together a plan, but now is the time for action. It's the year 2007. We need to put this into action, and what that means is there are going to be tough times ahead. When you deal with racial profiling, you're going to weed out those people that are racist within the department. And what are we going to do? Are we going to make the sacrifice when the times are tough to address those issues so that we can protect not only our police departments and the members, the honest, hardworking members in the police department, but all the also the people in the community? When you take the oath, it says protect and serve. That means everyone. That means the good guys and the bad guys. You're there to protect and serve the community. You're there to protect and serve everyone. I hope that as we go forward today, we will make the sacrifices and the tough decisions to really address and implement the racial profiling issue and make the hard, tough changes that lie ahead. And again, I commend both the police department and the people in the community. If someone was to ask me what percentage of police officers do I think are hardworking, good, honest people, I would say there's 98%. I did see ugliness when I was with the sheriff's office, but for the most part, there are good, honest, hardworking people. It's the other people that we need to address, and hopefully we can move forward and put this issue behind us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, folks. Are there other members of the Racial Profiling Committee here? If there are, could you please stand? Thank you for serving on this committee. We appreciate the efforts that you're going to undertake. Please call the vote.
Adams?
I want to thank the mayor and his team and Joanne and the chief and Joe and everybody for helping put this together. I think it's an important, very important step forward. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, as Woody Allen said, 90% of life is showing up. And I'm really glad that all sides showed up for this discussion, because the presence sometimes just of certain folks that represent important parts of this debate really says a lot, and it means a lot. And I acknowledge that and appreciate the discussion. I appreciate the approach Joanne's taken. I was very impressed when she and I met a few months back to talk about this, what kind of dialogue has happened. So this has been a great effort, Mayor. I really appreciate it. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, when we first had the hearing on this committee, October, I have to confess I'd never seen the head of the Portland Police Association, Robert King, quite so angry. And I can safely say in the last couple of years I've had that opportunity to see him in many different frames of mood. So I want to really commend Robert King for doing exactly what he should be doing, and that's being a leader and getting involved in this. I think nobody in this council or in this room needs to be convinced that racism does in fact exist. I think really the open question is, you know, can we eliminate it? This committee, I think, is going to do all it can and come up with some good recommendations that will hopefully make this place, the city, a better place for us to be living, despite our creed, color, ethnic origin, religion. So I'm very excited about this. I want to thank the mayor for his leadership in getting this to where it is. Aye.
Stan?
Well, I also want to thank everyone, and particularly Joanne and Alejandro and Chief Sizer for leading this and all the folks who took part. I think both reality and perception of racial profiling is crippling to community policing and therefore makes it almost impossible to address public safety issues that need to be addressed. The heart of trying to keep a city safe is citizens working with police and with other community groups. And I think the perception of disparate treatment, as well as the reality and some of the statistics, it makes it almost impossible to get to the kind of policing situation that we need to be successful, and we can't do it without trust. And there's a lot of work to be done on the causes. The passion with which people feel about this is actually heartening, but it's going to be difficult because, you know, it involves people feeling as if they're being called racist, and it feels people are being treated as if there were racist intentions. And these are the kind of things that are very, very hard to talk about, which is why I'm so glad that we are talking about it. And I don't believe this committee in and of itself will solve the problem, but I think it creates a basis to solve the problem. And I think it's not a coincidence that this is happening under Mayor Potter, who is perhaps goes too far to say invented community policing, but certainly began to make it happen in the city, in this country, and is following up as mayor. So I'm ready to work with you, and I think that we've got a chance to take on something that I think is actually crippling to the country if we all keep working together. So my hat's off to you, and my work clothes are on and ready to keep going. So let's go. Aye.
Potter.
I want to thank everybody involved in this. For a community to be truly safe, it's got to be physically safe, and it's got to feel safe. And that requires the best efforts of the police and the community working together to create a safe environment physically and emotionally, so that when people call 911, they're calling a friend to help them. And we have a ways to go here in Portland. But that's my goal as the police commissioner, to work with this committee to eliminate any vestiges of racism from within the Portland Police Bureau and ultimately from our community. It often seems like we tend to deal with the symptoms instead of the root causes. And, you know, I've never seen a baby make a racist statement. But sometime between the child and the adult, things happen in our society that cause people to begin to discriminate and act inappropriately to other people based solely on the color of their skin, their sexual orientation, their gender, their age, in many respects. This is a big step for Portland in that we're moving away from just telling the police bureau, take care of it, to actually engaging the citizens to work with the police to take care of it. Because as you look at the recommendations of this committee that were submitted on October 17th, you'll see that there are actually recommendations for the committee as well as the police, because we know that it's a shared responsibility, that the police are required to work with the community, and in fact, the better the relationship, the easier it is for the police to do their job and do it well. So I look forward to getting the reports. I will be probably bringing back updates on a frequent basis to the council as to what's transpiring and how it is going. I appreciate the efforts of this committee and the efforts that you're going to make. It's not an easy task. And so perhaps Portland can discuss the issue of race, the relationship between people of color and police, in a way that not only leads to constructive dialogue, but to constructive action. So thank you all for doing this. I am excited about the prospects for Portland, for the police, and our community. Thank you. Aye. Please read the 10 a.m. time certain.
Agenda item 33, extend the 10-year property tax exemption for the West Shore Apartments by 1 year to facilitate the transfer of the property from Pacific Housing Developers to a nonprofit partner.
Staff?
Hi, I'm Barbara Sack. I'm here from the Planning Bureau to present the Planning Commission's recommendation on a request to extend the term of a 10-year tax exemption granted under the new multiple unit housing program for one additional year. Pacific Housing Developers requests an 11th year of tax exemption for the West Shore Apartments so that they may convey the project to a nonprofit partner. Although our city code, Chapter 3.104, which contains the new multiple unit housing regulations, is silent on extending the term of a tax exemption, this extension is allowed by the state statutes that enable the program in the case of low-income housing subject to a low-income housing assistance contract. The West Shore apartments are located at Southwest 2nd and Pine. The project was constructed over a public parking garage on the northeast corner of the block where Central Precinct used to be located. It was built as an 100% affordable housing project with 113 studio and one-bedroom units affordable to households at or below 50% median family income. The state of Oregon provided risk-share bonds and 4% tax credits to help finance this project. It also had a loan from PDC. The units in this project are rent-restricted for 10 years by the ordinance that granted the tax exemption and for a period longer than 10 years by the agreements made with the state of Oregon and PDC. In order to preserve the financial feasibility of the project and the affordability of the housing, Pacific Housing Developers wants to transfer the property to a nonprofit partner without incurring additional costs, which would be the property taxes. It is anticipated that this transfer will take longer than 6 months because of some bond-related refinancing requirements, one of which is if you refinance the bonds, you can't change ownership for 6 months. That would put the transfer of ownership beyond the June 30th, 2007 date, and property taxes would accrue. Siobhan Beto is here from the Portland Development Commission if you have any questions about the detail of the transfer. Brian McCarl is here from Pacific Housing Developers if you have any questions you would like to ask him. And Michelle Haynes of REACH is also here. We understand that REACH is the nonprofit that would step in as the partner on this project as Pacific Housing Developers steps out. PDC staff requested that the Planning Commission review this request because there is no set procedure on extending the term of tax exemptions. They wanted to go through the path of the original approval of the tax exemption, so they asked the Planning Commission to review this matter. The Portland Development Commission held a hearing on this request November 8th and recommended to the Planning Commission and City Council approval. The Planning Commission held a hearing on this request November 28th and recommended to City Council that the request be approved. While the Planning Commission is not usually involved in evaluating the financial aspects of tax exemption projects, the affordable housing provided by this project was listed as a public benefit, and the recommendation is made thinking about the preservation of the affordable housing. So the Commission found that facilitating this transfer of ownership is consistent with the city's comprehensive plan housing policy, which calls for encouraging the retention of existing rental housing at rent levels affordable to area residents. This project was originally built to serve low-income, entry-level downtown workers and other residents. This action would also support the city's no-net loss of affordable housing in the central city. This is an initiative that the City Council adopted in 2001 by Resolution 36021. The Planning Commission asked me to point out, and this is in their letter to you, that this may be a situation that the council encounters again, where a private for-profit developer has gotten a 10-year tax exemption for an affordable housing project, and at the end of the 10 years, there's difficulty maintaining the affordability levels in the project when the project's going to go back on the tax rolls. As I mentioned, the state statutes allow an extension of the term of the tax exemption if a project is low-income housing and subject to a low-income housing assistance contract for the length of that contract. And in last November, you changed the TOD program, the Transit-Oriented Development Program, that's available outside the central city to allow such an extension of term. The central city program, the new multiple unit housing program, is currently under a moratorium except for 100% affordable housing projects. When the council looks at the regulations of this program again, if it chooses to reactivate it, this is something you might want to consider. So the Planning Commission recommends approval of this request. Are there any questions?
Barbara, so the actual value is $98,000 a year of an abatement. That's what I'm reading. And something.
Well, she's doing that, Commissioner. I just mentioned, just for the record, that as Housing Commissioner, I had our staff review this and with a look to what our changes in tax abatement policy are, and I just found it completely consistent, I think, with, it's a little bit of a new wrinkle, but with both the actual changes we've made and I think more importantly the intent, given that this was a kind of an unexpected change. We haven't seen too many situations where a for-profit is transferred to a nonprofit. But I think it fits everything that we've been trying to do in changing the program.
And I agree. I just wanted to try to quantify what the amount.
That's the figure the PDC provided us for. It would have been for the 2003-04 tax year.
Okay. Yeah. Other questions? Thank you very much. People signed with testifying?
We have two people signed up, Brian McCarl and Michelle Haynes.
Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor Potter. My name is Michelle Haynes. I'm the Housing Development Manager for Reach Community Development. I'm going to just make my remarks brief and say that Reach has been working with Brian McCarl and the other partners in this project, with the state of Oregon, with PDC, and with the other interested parties for about a year on a very complicated transaction to transfer the property to Reach. Our interest in this project rests on the fact that the 113 units in this project are occupied by folks not just under 50% of median, probably close to three-quarters of them are under 30% of median. These folks very much need this housing. We want to make sure that it's preserved and that the rents are kept as low as possible. The other thing is that this project was originally conceived as workforce housing with the assumption that the folks in the project would not need resident-based services. And in fact, over time, with this project, as with many others, we have found that because of the very low incomes of the folks in the project, that they really do need a higher level of service. Reach is a full-service CDC with a full management department and resident services department, and we were approached because we could come in and provide the entire package of services to these folks, and we are eager to do that. So we are very supportive of this, and I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, good morning. I'm Brian McCarl. I'm the managing member of Pine Street Investors LLC, which is the general partner of Pine Street Associates Limited Partnership, which owns the West Shore. I noticed that your action item has Pacific Housing Developers, and I think when you take formal action, it should be with respect to Pine Street Associates Limited Partnership. Pacific Housing Developers was the nominal original general partner, but it was succeeded 10 years ago when we finished the project by the group that's owned and operated it. So for formal action, whatever you take, I would just submit that it is Pine Street Associates Limited Partnership. Thank you for that. I'm here with my partner, Bob Walsh. We built the building, developed it, and built it 10 years ago, as Michelle has pointed out, for low-income people. And I'm happy to say that we accomplished that in terms of safe, decent, affordable housing for 113 people. We did find over a decade that many of the people in our building, in addition to being very low income, have a very high need for service enrichment, case management, job training, other kinds of special services, which as private contractors and developers, we really don't have the ability to do. So we have enjoyed running the property. It produces very, very low cash flow. Without the tax abatement, it will unquestionably go into a negative cash flow. Our goal in this is recognizing that the financing that was used to construct the project, bonds, PDC money, the West Shore really is a value and public purpose. And our goal has been to see that it is always operated and maintained as safe, decent, affordable housing, and we're very happy that that's happened. At this point, though, we really do believe that it's in the best interest of the asset as a value and public purpose, and most importantly, to the residents, that REACH come in as an operator over the next, we hope, 40 or 50 years, so that they can get not only the housing that they should have, but that they can have and enjoy the service enrichment that they need. The tax abatement extension that we're requesting this morning will give us the time to continue the work that we have been doing with REACH for years now to try and work our way through this so that they can take over our position in the asset. So Bob Walsh is here. Bob, would you like to make any comments?
My name is Bob Walsh. Thank you for having us this morning. We've been involved both as companies, my brother and I, as investors and developers of affordable housing for almost 40 years. Interestingly, the first project we built in 1967, we gave to REACH about 6 years ago. It seems to me that the continuation of affordable housing and the keeping existing projects in that affordable housing stock is extremely important. And the projects that we, and actually we gave five projects away 5 or 6 years ago, was a very simple process. It took 6 or 7 or 8 months. We've been working on this donation for 2.5 years because of the incredible brain cramping that goes on in these things. It's not just simply call REACH, say, gee, there's a piece of property down on 2nd and Pine. We'd like you guys to have it. We'll write our sign our title over to you and please operate it and have a good time. It's much, much, much more complicated than that. A question you might ask is, gee, why weren't we diligent enough so that we didn't have to come ask for an extension? Well, the answer, short one on that, is that we knew the tax situation was coming. We've been working diligently on it, and it's just more complicated than any of us ever thought that it would be.
Questions? I sure appreciate you folks doing what you do for our community, and particularly for those citizens who have a hard time making their paychecks stretch every month. So thank you very much. There's people signed, but is that it? Okay. This is a non-emergency.
Right.
And moves to a second vote.
I would like to make a couple comments.
Yes, please.
Folks are here. I really do think that this is the kind of the project that I think exemplifies at its best private-public partnerships, and where we have abatements that go towards providing housing in structures such as this, I would argue that's the least that we can do to provide affordable housing. It's interesting, on this one block, there's such a contrast of examples. And I would just point to this portion of this block as the model, at least for the one that represents what I think is the best example of what the public can do to partner with the private sector in providing this really important kind of housing. So I wanted to make sure that I made that point while you all were here, while folks from PDC and planning are here. It's really an honor to be able to help on projects like this.
Thank you all very much. Please read the 10:30 time certain.
Agenda item 34, accept the 2006 report on officer-involved shootings from the Independent Police Review Division.
There's been a number of concerns raised by the community in regards to having the ability to review this document before it's officially presented to council. I've asked Auditor Blackmer to please release the information immediately. But also, we would like to reschedule a date, a council date. I think it's the 24th.
At 2 p.m.
At 2 p.m. Is that okay with the rest of the council to hold us off so we can have the community review it?
Yeah, I appreciate that very much.
Okay.
And it's certainly not a reflection on the auditor's office or the work that was done. Quite the contrary, I think it would be a mistake to allow anything to distract from the substance of the report. And I think this is actually going to be very helpful, so I appreciate your effort, Mayor.
Okay, we'll move on to the regular agenda. Please read item 42.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District to provide enhanced security and cleaning during construction of light rail facilities on 5th and 6th Avenues.
Second reading, vote only. Please call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 43, second reading.
Amend an interagency agreement for Portland Parks and Recreation with the Portland Development Commission for professional and technical services for park improvements for fiscal year 2006-2007.
So vote only. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 44.
Amend fees associated with fire regulations.
Mayor Potter, if I could.
Yes.
I'm going to ask this to be referred back to my office. I just say briefly for anybody tracking this one, the council instructed the Fire Bureau to raise fees to get about $750,000 more in revenue as part of this year's budget instructions, and that's actually built into our budget, so I'm going to need to bring this back. We had done a little bit more of an across-the-board fee increase proposal and had noticed that pretty well, I think. In the last couple of weeks or month, we've actually modified the proposal and proposed no increase in the base fee, which I think is basically in line with the council's stated goal of trying to keep the hit to small business as low as possible. So, you know, the average small business would not see much of an increase. To balance that, we made a pretty significant proposed increase in the special events fee. And what happened and slipped in the last week, and I wanted to apologize for that, and we'll bring it back once we have time to have some conversation, is we did do a good job of noticing the Expo Center and the other big event players of the original proposal, but as we changed it to benefit small business, we didn't get it back to them in time, so they need some more time to look at it and see if they can handle the proposed amount we're making, give us some feedback. So we'll bring this back in a couple of weeks once we can do that process properly.
Okay. Items move back to Commissioner Sten's office. Let's read item 35.
Pay claim of Dante Marks.
Please come forward, staff.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of the City Commission. I'm James Rice. I'm a deputy city attorney. I've been working on a file involving Mr. Marks, who sued the city of Portland. It stemmed from an incident in May of 2003. A lawsuit was filed in December of 2004. For approximately 2 years, there's been intense discovery on the case. Recently, because it's filed in the United States District Court, it came before a settlement judge. There was a settlement conference that took place. There were significant disputes in both fact and law within the case itself. Judge King became involved. The settlement conference initially failed, and then Judge King, on his own pretty much, got the parties back together. He crafted what he thought was a reasonable resolution of the matter as an independent individual. The plaintiff has accepted that, feeling that was a fair settlement of the case. There's a significant amount of attorney's fees in the case, which is one of the reasons that the settlement is in the figure that it is. Risk management became involved. We took it the upside, the downside, what might happen, including the current state of people's thinking, I believe. I think that the settlement is prudent under the circumstances. I'm here to answer any questions that either the mayor or any of the commissioners might have on the matter.
Questions from the commissioners?
So just to be really, really clear, the thinking is, based on your expertise, that it will be cheaper to settle than to proceed.
It would be. There's